Hello, everybody. Welcome to another weekly Tuesday Team REI Vault Huddle Call. Today is Tuesday, November 10th, 2015. Welcome to the call. I see some new people on the call, and so we welcome you. And I see some people that are regulars. Hey, Dale. I see Dale and Graham and Art and a few people I don't recognize. I think Justin and good. So anyway, we're excited to have you. This is an opportunity to ask questions about any topic, really. If it's marketing or technical, that's fine. Or we have found that most of these calls are really around deals, real estate deals. And we do these calls are recorded, usually within 24 hours. And we also have most of these calls transcribed, so that you can actually go out to the membership site, reivault.com, and it's searchable. So if you're ever looking for a particular topic, you should be able to just type it in and go. If you ever have questions for us during the week, please always email support@reivault.com. And if it's something specific to a deal, email dealhelp@reivault.com. And especially, we're always looking for what you need help most with, what topics you'd like covered on these calls, and everything we do as a group is based on your feedback. And we'd like you to email that feedback or recommendations to suggestionbox@reivault.com. So if you've got a question, for those that are new, you just press *5. We keep the phone muted. You could press *5, and we'll see that you've raised your hand, and we can bring you into the call and ask the question, and then sometimes we'll randomly pick on some people. I shouldn't say pick on people, but we'll bring different people into the call. I got some really good feedback, Chris, last week. Because we kind of opened up the call last week, and there were no questions about halfway through the call, and so we opened it up, and I got some real good feedback that people really liked the dialogue and got a lot of good nuggets from last week's call. For anybody that was not on last week's call, I definitely suggest going back to last week's call, which was beginning of November, Tuesday, November 3rd, and also the week before that with Lou Brown. We did a live discussion on how to make offers without using all cash and got some really good feedback. I know a lot of people have either gone to Lou's Jumpstart. I know Graham was out there last week. And I would strongly encourage all of you, if you're not making creative offers and know how to buy properties with owner financing at zero interest or taking over properties subject to, I would definitely plan on learning that technique because you're missing a lot of deal opportunities. So with that, Mr. Chico, any updates before we open this up? And if you have a question, go ahead and press *5 right now, and then we can get you into the queue. And if not, Chris, updates?
You know, I don't have any updates. I did want to, you know, we had a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, when we had the email call, and you know, just that was, you know, mostly a tool, you know, a conversation that we had in terms of how to manage your email and everything else. And so I was just thinking about just the other day about how the and I think we've recommended this to people before, but how useful in everything that you and I do. We have various amounts of tools that we use and we float around, but the usefulness of workflowy, I just wanted to recommend that again, because I think you and I go back and forth when we create outlines and we flesh things out with that a lot, and I just find that it's just it's one of those things I couldn't live without. Like, you could take everything away, and if you could leave me with that only, then I'd be okay. And so I was just going to mention that again to anybody who's not familiar with that tool to check it out, because I think it's immensely useful. I think you would probably agree, or that you use it very often, don't you?
100%. In fact, yeah. What we should do is we should schedule a go-to webinar for this call, like we did with Lou, except
yeah,
a better tool, and actually do a demo and discussion for at least a half of the call, walking through and showing people how we used Workflowy, but also how we're running the business with certain tools and how we manage the KPIs and some of the dashboarding that we're doing, because I bet that would be real insightful. You know, Chris and I right now are going through our 2016 planning session for all of our lines of business. We've got REI Vault and planning for what the growth is going to look like. We also have the real estate side of the business, and we've got a couple of other assets as well, some that I can't yet announce, but we've acquired a company for how we're going to plan on generating national buyers. So we're putting our business planning together and how we break up the entire business into departments and divisions, and then put key performance indicators and then break out the plan. I think it would be real helpful for people to see how we do that. And we use Workflowy to flush stuff out, and then we use Smartsheet, which is our planning tool, because I think there's a lot of if instead of running a business on fire, that always depends us as the entrepreneur being involved in everything. This has really, you know, allowed us to kind of stand back and give clear direction. And also, Chris, we should show for managing the VAs. You know, we got a staff of over, I think we have over 32 people now on staff across four continents. And some people work our shift and some people work at night. And walking through how we distribute the workload, I think that would be real helpful for people. So we should plan that maybe in a couple weeks. So let's
yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. So,
cool. I would definitely
agree. What else, Chris?
That's it. That's the only comment I was going to make. I don't have anything else specific. So maybe if we wanted to see what questions there may be or topics that maybe we could discuss on the call today.
We will do that. One other quick announcement for everybody. Chris and I will not have a call next week. Chris and I are going to be in San Diego with we're in a high-end mastermind called the Collective Genius. There are about 110 people around the country, and we get together four times a year. And so we're all getting together, and we'll be in San Diego next week. So no call Tuesday, November 17th. So next week we will not be on the call. Also, an announcement either has been made or is coming out, but the VAs who are processing leads will have tomorrow off, which is a national holiday. It's actually a combination of Veterans Day here in the United States. It's also Diwali, which is what's called the Festival of Light in India, which is where most of our VAs, and it's a national day off for them. So they will be off. The leads will not be processed during tomorrow's day, but they will be processed with full staff on Thursday and going forward. So with that, looks like the first call is Art. I'm going to bring you live here, Art. Give me just a second. And then if any of you have another question, go ahead and press *5 now, and we can get you into the queue. Art, you are live.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Art.
What's going on, guys?
You tell me. I think you're a busy guy nowadays, aren't you?
Yeah, I I am busy. But that's not, I'm not complaining.
So, Art, just to, you and I have been chatting. I know you got a monster deal that we're working together on and need to get that sort of teed up. But, you know, some people have listened to some of these calls, they've been on some of these calls and have heard you in the past. And it would be great if you gave them an update. My understanding, you said you had over 40 properties under contract currently. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, over 40, and just picked up two more today. All of it is coming from the marketing, but again, it's I'm finding, you know, people that have multiple properties, and you know, when I talk to them, I'm always asking kind of like open-ended questions just to kind of prod a little bit, because not all the time are they interested in divulging all the properties that they have, but you know, 5 minutes into the conversation, after I start, they understand that, hey, I'm serious, I'm asking all the right questions, you know, I use that seller call sheet, and then they just kind of open up and they just say, well, you know, I have five other properties that I really would like to sell. Would you be interested in getting that information as well? And that's kind of how it's gone. I hit two or three people. One had 631. I don't know that number. Sorry about that. One of them had, seven properties. We had scheduled appointments for just to see three of them, and we ended up seeing six. And I got all those. He just faxed me the contracts this week, Monday, I guess. He faxed them Friday. Friday, he sent them over Friday, and I already have one of them probably sold. So it's just, you know, just how you talk to people, you know, you got to instill the confidence in them that, hey, you're in charge, you're in command. And, you know, the longer I'm doing this, and again, I'm still a newbie at it, but, you know, just the way you come across the phone is your friend, you know, you got to just kind of treat it that way, and they sense it, and they respond. And that's the way, Gary, I got the one we're going to work on. Just an update on that. I found a real good buyer for that, to do it the way you wanted to do it. Actually met with him on, he was buying two 6-unit buildings. We consummated that deal last night. We ended up getting that for 6.25. Buyer wanted, you know, initially around 750. And I just kept back and forth with them, and finally 9:00 last night. I was on the
property. All right, so hold on. You're picking up the properties for how much on those, and what are you going to sell them for?
I got the one for $275, sold it for $290, the other one for $300, and I forget what was it. I should know this. $675 divided by 2. I think like $300. Yeah. We ended up around somewhere in that neighborhood.
So you should net around 30, 40 grand? 30 grand?
Yeah, grand? Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So I'm waiting on how he's going to buy it. On the, you know, through his corporation, he's get me all that information so I can put it on the contract, get it over to him, and then go out and pick up the hand money from him. But this is a guy, Gary, that I sat down with him Monday, yesterday, went at a Starbucks, and you know, I kind of opened up the portfolio that I got from Ned, and just kind of whet his appetite a little bit as far as, you know, the type of deals that I can bring to him, and just kind of put a bug in his ear about, you know, this is, you know, these properties are worth, you know, $2.5 million. I said, I'm picking up 7, 8 more, 9 more on Thursday, and they'll probably be worth, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 to $4 million. And I said, and, you know, we can, you know, possibly structure something that, you know, you're not having to come up with that kind of money, you know, just maybe put $400,000 down, and I'll figure out and explain to you how we can do the rest. I didn't really go into much detail because I don't know the details, but definitely piqued his interest, and I know it did because he kept coming at me for more information about it.
Of course. You know what? This is for all of you. Justin, you're on the call, and Graham. Actually, this is for everybody, really. But when you're talking to your buyers, and you start building some rapport with your buyers, you should find out their cost of money and what are they typically spending for their money, and do they have plenty of it, and find out specifically points and interest. So you might find that they're paying 3 points typically and 12% interest, 10% interest, 15%, because that'll give you a baseline of how you might be able to structure a deal, get them in. They didn't have to come up with the hard money or the private money, and you could actually provide that for them. You probably could increase your profit and take a spread done right. So that's awesome. Even if you don't know how to do that, I'd still ask every buyer of what are they paying for their money, and once you learn that technique for some of the deals. So I know Graham in Florida was talking about the number of deals they passed and missed that they could get with, you know, some owner financing. And so I definitely ask the buyers that at the very least, because now you're going to know. Let's say in your market, I think in Pittsburgh, I think the cost of money is probably 15% interest. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And most people in most markets need to come up with, they might get 70 or 75% of the after repaired value, which means they got to come up with at least 25% down of project cost, which means, like in our market in California, the going rate on money is about 12% and 3 points, 2 to 3 points. And it's 65% or 70% of the purchase price. So if you could actually structure something where they can come in with less money down and maybe even lower cost of money, now all of a sudden you're going to have crazy hungry buyers. So that's on your deal. And I know Art, you and I have to structure it, but it would be great to be able to use this and share how it goes with everybody as we get it wrapped up and locked up.
Yeah, my question I have on that, Gary, is how long does it take to get one of these deals done? I mean, I've never done one before, so, you know, when I meet with Ned on Thursday, I would like to try to give him some type of time frame, if that's a possibility. If not, I'll just shut my mouth.
You know, over a couple of weeks, you know, the biggest concern on your deal with the $4 million package is not scaring away the seller, right? So you want to make sure that you got an all-cash offer in hand. So I'd lock that deal up to the best of your ability, all cash, and at least paper it, right? And then we can craft the second, you know, offer at a higher price on terms on that deal. But we want that seller to kind of be comfortable, but it'll take a couple of weeks. I actually am going to have a dialogue with, I have a specific way I want to structure this, but I'm going to talk with Lou on a particular piece on the back end of how, because if we could get the seller, if we can get your seller, we should just tell everybody if you're okay with me sharing it. So the seller, these properties are all free and clear, correct?
I don't know that. I know the majority of the ones that the six that I have right now, five of them are free and clear. I believe one has a small mortgage on it.
Okay.
And he kind of mentioned in passing about the other ones. There may be some financing on them. To what extent, I don't know yet, but I'll definitely know that by on Thursday. When he shows me all the numbers.
Yeah.
I'm expecting that most of them are free and clear.
One thing you can do, if you get an all-cash offer, you could actually, let's say you get all those deals into an all-cash position, which I think would be great. You could get them into all-cash. Because now if you got them in all-cash, you can open up title on those deals and get preliminary title reports run and let the title company go and pull the underlying mortgages and get that, you know, that structured. They may even be able to do, send in requests to the banks to get the full payoff. That would be helpful. But anyway, so let's say you got the seller, their partners, then they want to retire, right? But there's a massive amount of cash flow on these deals. I think you told me just on some of the deals, there's over 250,000 annualized cash flow on these deals.
Correct.
And so the trick is going to be, you know, if we came up with a creative offer, how much down would the seller be comfortable with? So if it's a $4 million package, could we come up with $400,000 down to pay them? And then could we structure where they get a fixed payment on a monthly basis and preferably zero interest? So we can pay them principal only. So if it's $4 million, I just ran the math. Let's say we gave them $400,000 down and $10,000 a month. That would be a 360-month payment, which would be 30 years. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be phenomenal. And then if we sold that package to your buyer and we get paid off down the road, right, let's say the new buyer wants to sell or cash out down the road, then we want to continue to use that money and not have to pay the seller because we got zero interest, right? It's almost like a $4 million line of credit that we can then use and continue to pay the seller, backed by very, very safer collateral, which means by another property, i.e. lending. We could actually just lend that money in first position on some other stuff. And so we don't want to go crazy on this, but we will we'll definitely work. And it's a couple of weeks. On that type of project, we probably would get an attorney. I've got a particular attorney that we'd use to draft up the paperwork. And so once we know the structure, I got to get that piece done. So there's going to be the purchase agreement. So what would happen is the process here would be the offer that we make to the seller, right? So you're going to have an all-cash offer, but you're going to have a second offer, which is going to be based on terms that we're going to agree to. So we're going to sign the purchase agreement first, and then the actual ownership of how they transfer ownership to us or to the new buyer, that would come as a second piece. So that's the piece that would take a couple of weeks. Does that make sense?
It'll make sense when it starts to happen. I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I'm just kind of type of person that learns once I go through it, then I really understand it.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, what else, Art, while we have you? What other questions do you have so far?
The only other question is we had talked about that in state's call center or whatever. I would like to know, I kind of put my girl out, so I'm flying solo, and I did a mailer. It's coming out, going to go out on the 12th, and I want to kind of get set up with that as soon as possible. So when the calls are coming in, I have everything in place. I don't want to be – I just don't have the time to call hang-ups. I just not in the wheelhouse.
Yeah, for sure. So what I – for everybody that's on this call, we're helping. One of the challenges at this point with Art is really having a good phone staff that can actually do a lot of the phone work, calling hang-ups, calling follow-ups, calling leads, nurturing the leads that are super professional and know exactly what they're doing. And so we're going to actually help. We're going to help Art put this in place. And there are two new things coming that I don't want to talk about yet on this call. We'll do it for you. I'm also doing it for Justin, who's also on this call, and I'm doing it for Jim Stalling because they asked to be on the early release. But we've got some new things coming. One is we partnered with a third-party company to build out scripted web forms and auto-generation of paperwork. It's going to be called REI Vault Forms, and where the sales script is actually built right into the web, and it's all integrated to Podio. So you can go, your salesperson can pull up a web form. It's totally scripted to capture all the types of questions in the order about the loan and, you know, what type of property, everything. And then also tapping into a third-party phone team that actually can do this for a minimum 5 hours a week and getting that set up. So that would be something that everybody, we've been getting a lot of people asking for help. And so we're going to do it for a handful of people and then offer it as an add-on. We're not trying to make any money off the phone team by any means, but we're just working through. In fact, even the phone team, they usually have like a $500 startup setup fee. I've gotten them, based on volume, to waive that for us. So that should be the next, for you, Art, conservatively, over the next couple weeks. I'm going to be gone next week. So Chris and I will be gone next week, but the following week would be a good time to kind of get this thing set up and started for you.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yeah. Cool. I'm going to put you back on hold. If anybody has a question, go ahead and press *5, and we'll bring you into the call. And here we go. Let's see here. We have 229. I believe this might be Amy. 229 area code, you are live.
Hi, I'm not Amy. I'm Camille from Tallahassee.
Hi, Camille. How are you?
I'm doing good. My question is, we've noticed with all the zip codes that we're sending out and stuff that we're getting responses from certain zip codes. How do we go about, I guess, eliminating the zip codes we're not getting calls from? I guess those people don't need to sell their houses. We're just not getting any response from them. We're getting responses from about 3 or 4 of our zip codes.
How long have you been marketing so far, Camille?
This week will be our 3rd week that we'll send stuff out.
Okay. Here's what I would do for you. What I would do is I would send an email to support@reivault.com,
mm-hmm.
and I would ask them for some information on the zip codes that have already been mailed to so far,
okay.
and let them provide you, because what may have happened is the team may have, when they set up your marketing, because the marketing is over a 60 or 90 day period, so they'll pull a set of zip codes, but some of the
mm-hmm.
zip codes may have been marketed and some of the zip codes may still be scheduled as part of the campaign.
Okay.
And so before you make the decision that zip codes are not working yet, I would make sure that you know what zip codes have actually been marketed to. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it does. Okay.
Yeah, so you can email support@REIVault and ask them if they could provide that. And they'll
okay.
most likely, because they're going to be out tomorrow, I have a feeling they probably won't be able to get back to you until Thursday on that. But they can
okay.
provide
that.
That's
not a big deal.
Hmm?
Okay.
Cool.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Awesome. Camille, since I have you on the call, any initial deals under contract from the marketing so far?
Yeah, we've done 2 weeks, and we closed on one Friday.
Hey, congratulations.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's got a market value, a regional market value of $115.
I think you're cutting out a little bit, Camille.
Oh, hold on 1 second. I'll take it off the speaker and see if that's better. The retail market on the house was 100 to 115. It had a tenant in it. She was, the owner was in foreclosure. Basically, we paid her $2,000, are going to bring her loan current. $2,000 she walked off and said, you can have it. And so we've got a tenant in place, and we've actually got somebody that's going to look at it tonight. If they look at it and decide to buy it, with what we've got into it, we'll make about, I think, $25,000 off of it if they decide to buy it. If not, we're going to hold it, and the tenant's got a lease until the end of February. So she's paying below market price, so we would put somebody in as a lease option tenant and just start collecting higher rent. The mortgage on it's like $500, and we could get $1,000 for it.
Awesome.
So
Camille, I know you're going to have a bunch of people that their ears are kind of perking up right now because this is a total creative deal. This is you came
yeah.
from Lou Brown, right? So you've been following,
right.
learning from Lou Brown for a while, right?
Right. Yeah.
Is Lou awesome?
Lou is awesome. Yeah. I've done Lou, and I'm in Lou's mastermind group. So just the support that I get with the mastermind group is great, too. So
awesome.
I've enjoyed
that.
Picked, but yeah.
So you're doing this deal, and you're not coming up with all cash. You basically wrote a check for $2,000.
It was 2,400. I think it was 2,600 by the time we paid the closing cost, and we paid her $2,000 to just walk away. Now I can negotiate with the bank and get the bank. It's got some money in arrears, but you know, I'm not worth like sitting here going, well, are we going to wholesale this one, or are we going to keep it on our own and just pay the arrears up? So we've got two options, and I might even be able to get them where they will take some now and some later to bring it up to date. But our initial plan was to lease option it out to somebody and get their option money and stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
Yes.
So, Camille, I'm just going to – I don't know if you have any more questions for us, but I'm going to use this as an awesome opportunity. Chico, if you're okay with it. But if there's anybody else that wants to press *5 and ask Camille a few questions about this deal, because we get a lot of people that just do all cash offers, Camille, and this is a whole new world. And somebody has a question, but I think that's awesome. So what was, just out of curiosity, what you said the house is worth somewhere between 100 and 115?
15, right?
And how much was owed?
$49,200 and something.
So you're picking this property up, you're taking over the mortgage. You're just taking over the mortgage. That's called subject to, right? You don't have to go to the bank and assume that, did you?
Nope. We just put it into a trust and had her assign the beneficial interest. And so we just sent a letter to the bank, let them know we were the new management company, and I'm going to go meet our tenant in just a few minutes.
So a lot of people don't know this world, but a lot of people say, well, there's a due on sale clause, that the loan actually has a due on sale clause, and they wrote those, the banks wrote those clauses years ago, and says that if the property transfers ownership, the bank could actually call the loan due. However, there's a little law that was written, I think, in 1978 and then revised in 1982 called Garn-St-Germain, 17-01C, of the U.S., which is a national law that basically says there's 13 clauses under Garn-St-Germain where the due-on-sale clause does not apply, and one is, when a property is put into the trust for the benefit of the grantor. So that's why a trust is used, right? You put a property into a trust, and then behind the scenes, the assignment of beneficial interest, which is not a recorded document, and that's how you actually took legal title. Correct?
Right. Correct.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. So you're picking up the property for $49,000 plus $2,000 to the seller, so you're into it for $50,000.
If we paid off the mortgage, but I mean, I'm leaving the mortgage in place and take over the $500 payments. You know, it's a no-brainer on that. If we decide to wholesale it, we'll make the rest of the money. I think it, the guy that's looking at it is like right at $80,000, which will still be a good deal for him. And it's a good deal for us. It's got a brand new metal roof on it, and it's got a brand new HVAC system in it. So, and it's in a good neighborhood. But as far as the call and the loan due, it's like Chase would have to go through evicting the tenants, and then they would have an empty house on their hands, and they have to go through all the process. And it's like, why would they do that when they're getting payments? So I don't worry about them calling the loan due, which I had to explain to the attorney. It's like, why would they do that? I mean, they're getting paid. Isn't that what they want?
Yeah. I've never heard in the last 20 years, at least I haven't. I haven't seen any properties that have actually had the loans called, even with properties that have been transferred directly to a new group. But
yeah,
it's a really great mechanism. And so
it
that's
is.
Awesome.
Yep. It's cool. Good. I mean, we're happy about it because I don't want to go pay a whole bunch of money down there. We're trying to keep all of our money in our pockets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome, Camille. Well, listen, I'm going to put you back on hold unless anybody else has a question for Camille. Chico, you have any thoughts, observations on that?
No, just a very interesting deal. You know, the only thing I was thinking about is that on some of these, you know, obviously you're more familiar with them than I am, but as you, and maybe this is what, obviously loose training, but maybe a bit of a case, you know, like in writing, seeing what the framework is. Like, I wonder if there's where's the 80-20 in the deals? In other words, there's, you know, you might have 10 different ways of doing these creative deals. But do they predominantly fall into one or two or a very small specific number of categories? In other words, where if you learn those two strategies, even though you could learn turn, but if you learn two, those two would be the best ones to get started with because most of the time the deals tend to fall into those.
I think that my quick answer is it depends on underlying financing. So if there's underlying financing on a property, then your approach is going to be different. It really is, it's a purchase agreement. So typically you're coming in with a purchase agreement. You got an all cash agreement, which is simple. That's a one pager. And then if you're going to take over existing financing, then it's instead of a one pager, it's a couple of pages. And so it's the financing. So instead of coming in and saying I'm putting a $100 deposit or a $1,000 deposit and the rest I'm going to pay in cash, you're expanding that out in terms of the financing. So what you're doing is you're saying a deposit of $1,000 and then you're taking in, and you basically says, you say, you know, taking over subject to existing financing in the amount of whatever the, you know, in Camille's example is $49,000, and then $2,000 on top of that to the seller in cash at closing, and then the total purchase price.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you have to do is I have a second pager that just continues to refine the financing conditions. Is what it is. That's why it goes from one page to three page. And so most of the deals, a lot of the deals will be where there's underlying financing. And then in the case where the seller is actually going to carry, which means the seller is going to carry some additional financing, right? Let's say Camille is going to give the seller $10,000 payable at $100 a month for the next 20 years at zero interest. Mm-hmm. There would be one more clause that would explain that, and then if she's doing that, she may have to create a, there may be a mortgage, right? Just like a bank loan, she may actually write it up as what's called a mortgage or a deed of trust. And that's usually done by a title company. The way Lou teaches that you can do all the paperwork yourself with a couple of clicks of a button, which is what I like. And
right.
So, and then down the road, what we're working on is to be able to set it up where these forms can be auto-generated right out of Podio.
Podio,
really,
yeah.
Cool. So awesome. Well, good. I don't see any other questions. If you want to raise your hand and ask us a question, press *5. There is El Nazar. Let's see here. El Nazar. See. 973, New Jersey,
live. Hey, how you guys doing? This is Nasser of Irby in Charlotte.
Hey, Nasser.
Hey, Nasser.
Hey, man, what's going on? I just wanted to, I just had a question. Art came on first. I was trying to press *5 then, but from Art's conversation, so if I'm interested in the phone rep, which I'm hopefully looking to pick one up within the next 60 days or so, do I just send an email to you guys or go through sales support?
Yeah, here's what you can do. Nasser. And for any of you that you're interested in getting some phone help, somebody that can be really professional on the phone, send an email to support@reivault.com, and in the subject, here's what you want to say. Please add me to the early release for phone VAs. And that will put you on the list so that we know who to reach out to first. There will be an announcement and a page that explains everything, but as you're kind of, it'll just put you in line for getting you set up with that. So if you need phone VAs, and you need some people to actually call hang-ups, do the follow-ups, and pre-screen your leads, and you need some help, just send an email. We're working on that over the next couple of weeks to be able to help people tap into that and get that kind of set up. So we've got we probably have 4 or 5 people in the group right now we're doing it initially for, and then we can get you, Nasser, on that list. And then for everybody else, it'll be more available kind of closer to the end of the year.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
Awesome. Great having you on the call. If you have any other questions, press *5. *5. Chris, you want to bring somebody else on the call, look at the list, and put some people on the spot?
I think I'll leave that up to you. You will be. I'd rather them. I'd rather you be the guilty party than me.
Well, for everybody's benefit, I put Graham and a few other people and Jim Stallings last week and Steve Carlson just open up the line, and then I asked Chris afterwards, hey Chris, what do you think? I just randomly opened up the line and picked on people. What do you think? And he goes, well, if they're on the call next week, we know that it's good, and if they're not on the phone in the future, we're
yes, that's
bad.
Right.
Yep. I'm gonna put Graham on. Hey, Graham, you there?
I am.
How's everything going, buddy?
Great.
So, how's business for you guys?
It's good. It's good. And I actually wrote some notes here while I was listening. One thing you told me, I want to say about 3 weeks ago, was we talked in private, and I was complaining because all of the spreads on my deals were so big, like, you know, 23,000, 30,000. And I don't know if it's you or Chris were talking about it. And you guys said to me, that just means you're missing stuff. And so, you know, we've kind of changed a little and gone back over our old lead. And I want to say just in the last week, we picked up and sold 3 or 4 properties that we wouldn't had because the spread was 7,000 or 8,000. I didn't think it would sell for more, and put it on the market. A great example is one we picked up. We put in our contract for 80, and I thought to myself, man, that's 10,000 too much. My salesperson put it for sale, sold it for 90 within an hour, and that person charged their buyer a $5,000 commission. So it actually went for 95, and I would have never put that under contract normally because I thought the spread was too thin. And didn't want to deal with it, and we'll end up making, you know, $10,000 for a very easy deal.
That's awesome, Graham.
So
you know,
that was great advice. Great advice by you. Great advice by you guys. We're probably going to pick up easily double what we would have before, even though they're smaller, you know, hits. They're definitely paying the bill.
That's awesome. Let me ask you this, Graham. Are you guys renegotiating down any of your deals as well? Are you going back to see if you can get a little bit of a discount?
We have. We've done that. Not a whole lot, but we definitely have. Some people tell me to wait till the last minute because if the person has, you know, in their mind, they've already spent the money they're about to get in their pocket, right? So the thought is wait until the day before they're supposed to close and then say you can't get it closed. And because they've already in their mind spent that money, they're more willing to negotiate down. We do it a little differently. I like to find out right away if I'm not going to be able to get the number I thought I was going to get for it. And within the first week of our 30-day contract, I go back and say, you know what, I've shopped this thing around. I made a mistake. It's overpriced. You know, we're going to need whatever it is. And after I've gotten feedback from my buyers that say, hey, I would buy this for 70. You're trying to get 80. Then I go back and, knowing that number, get a discount. Yeah, we definitely have.
Awesome. I wouldn't recommend this to everybody, but for you guys, I would start increasing that number as a forecast to try to see if you could get, let's say right now you get 30% of your properties, you're getting a discount. You know, plan next month to see if you can raise that number to 40%, 50%. Till eventually.
So do you ask for a discount on every deal? I mean, no matter what, are you asking for a discount, you're saying, or just on ones that seem skinny?
I mean, for me, I would, it comes down to the rapport and the relationship that you have with the seller. You cannot just let the seller go quiet and then come back last minute and beat him up because you could jeopardize the deal. So it really comes down to interacting and as part of the sales process to keep in touch with the seller and make sure and really sense the motivation. Because I think that there is a chance to get a much higher reduction, even if it's small, even if it's $1,200, you know, there's always something,
right.
You know, hey,
right.
We've got a little snag. We could get this thing. It might take an extra couple of days, but if I could get you to drop the price $1,257.18, I can get this closed today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those types of deals, you could, it really comes down to the type of seller and the relationship, but I do think that you could increase your profitability and your return by just doing a few extra things and just plan it with your team. So, you know, anyway, that's
great.
Just something. You guys have to think through it, but I would put that into your plan for 2016. And
okay, another note I wrote, I wanted to thank you guys again for recommending that because it's making a big difference. We're putting a lot more under contract, and, yeah, not all of them end up closing, but we're closing a lot more because of it and actually selling things for more than I – maybe it's just me and my valuations are way off, I guess, but the market's getting hotter, even hotter than I thought it was. But I'm surprised at what people are paying for these houses right now.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, the one thing I would do is that, and you may be doing this already, but the one thing I do is I have a special email address that I then subscribe to all the different wholesalers that are out there in our market. And so then you start to build up a list over 30 days, right? Because you have, you know, you start to get a lot of emails. And then instead of, say, normally you would go in, fill a real quest report, or maybe look at the MLS in order to determine what a property was sold for. What you can do is go ahead, and I do this in Gmail, is you can take that zip code of the property that you have now for sale, and you search for that under those emails, and you see what are the properties that these other wholesalers are pitching for and the prices. And so then, so you may find that, hey, in a particular area, in your neck of the woods, you were thinking, you know, let's say, Palm Harbor, right? So let's say that you got a deal in Palm Harbor, you're going to price for X, and then you search through the emails of all the wholesalers and what they've been selling, and you'll notice that, hey, you know what, a 3-2 in Palm Harbor, I noticed that everybody's been asking X for it, and that's actually a little bit more than I thought. And then you maybe also gauge it by, you know, sometimes you see a property and it gets passed around by a bunch of different wholesalers. And so you see the same property and over again. Sometimes you see the price reductions and you say, well, yeah, you know, things like that property, they haven't been able to move. But I think I use that as a second check to see if, hey, is the market hotter than maybe what the past sales indicate? And so I use the current pitches from other wholesalers as a way to maybe gauge what that property may go for, or maybe what should I ask to price it. Does that make sense?
It's a great idea, and I do actually follow wholesalers. We actually buy, not a lot, but I'd say one or two a month from other wholesalers that we then market and make money off of. And I'd say at least two a month we do that right now, people that I feel they're actually underpricing it. So I'll pick it up really fast and then you know, obviously re-wholesale it out to an investor who's willing to pay more for it. But I do follow, and that's a great idea. I will go back through and look at, you know, zip codes and what they've been selling for.
Yeah, especially when you have a house, you know, like you just look up the zip code. And, you know, I do that also with duplexes and triplexes, right, because if you get a duplex or triplex, those are sometimes hard to comp. You got to do it on income, and so you can look that up. Just, you know, I type that in and then look at all the emails and see, hey, last four or five properties that have come around have been asking, you know, this particular ROI. So maybe I'll readjust my price based on that new information. And then the other comment I was going to make is that, you know, in terms of price reductions, it is a judgment call. I mean, I would say that, you know, to me, this is just me personally. If I'm making a decent amount of money on the property, I tend not to, I may not go back to the seller, you know, to get some additional money. Just because, you know, I got a good enough deal, seller's happy, I'm happy, and I'm just going to sell the deal, get my money, and then move forward. I do agree with also being mindful of whatever the seller situation is, and in terms of you don't want to, I guess, you know, you want to make a certain amount of profit, you know, for your time, energy, and effort, and whatever the money you've invested in marketing. But I'm also just mindful of the other sellers. However, though, on the smaller deals, you know, if you're making $5,000 or $7,000, you know, just getting an extra $2,000 or $3,000, you know, makes a significant difference, you know, because you can go from making $7,000 to making $10,000, or from making $5,000 to making $8,000, and those numbers tend to add up, as, you know, because they're a larger percentage of the total profit that you would have normally gotten. So anyway, that's my 2 cents on that.
Okay.
It doesn't
great.
Hurt to ask. And if you don't ask,
yeah.
you won't get. So
yeah.
right.
my feedback is don't do this if you're brand new, but once you actually are making money and consistent money, you should always go back and work toward getting a discount. The ultimate goal is 100%. So, I mean,
right.
Kind of classic state.
Well, I would say the best way I could say it is be a pig, but don't be a hog, right? Isn't that saying pigs get fat, but hogs get slaughtered? There's a fine line between being a pig and being a hog, I guess. You know, it's a judgment
you
call.
Have,
but
you
anyway.
Don't have to go. You don't have to get a $50,000 reduction, but $12,000,
right.
You know, $1,200 or $1,500, you know. Especially it covers, if you've got staff, it basically covers either the cost of the marketing for that deal, or it covers the cost of the VA or the commission, you know, internal commission, or whatever you want to do. I would work over time to put that right into the standard operating procedure of business. All best, it's the best practice that you have any real company manages to that model. It's why, like, you know, it's why in some of the other industries, they wait until the last minute to close deals. The last day of the quarter, like, I came out of the software industry originally 15 years ago, and all deals were done at the last hour or the last day of the quarter because that was just the process. They were always going for a better deal. So, you know, I wouldn't do it if you're brand new, but I'd definitely do it, like, for Graham. So, you know, Graham, I'd love you to kind of keep us posted on that. I'd love to hear, you know, best practices and some numbers. And one other thing, Graham. Are you guys getting video testimonials of all of your deals that you close with the seller?
No, we definitely aren't. You know, we haven't been going all that long doing this, so we're still trying to staff up, I guess it is. Like, a great example is you tell me to start taking on more contracts. Well, the caveat to that is it's great. You make more money, but the other side of it is now you have to transaction coordinate 30 deals at a time, like Art, and that takes a lot of manpower. Just the transaction coordinating side, getting to closing side, you know, of that. So we've been getting testimonials basically written when we feel someone really likes us, and it happens sometimes. We ask them for a letter or some kind of email so that we can then use it. But we have a plan to do video testimonials. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah, awesome. I would put that into your 2016 plan. Do it with buyers. Do it with sellers. And even if you get somebody like your admin to go out there and pay them an extra $50 to take that video, you know, it doesn't, they can pick their iPhone and then use that to actually write the testimonial letter. So you basically flip on the phone and just, you know, when you hand the check. Now, the other thing you could do is always go out to these sellers as a follow-up after you close and give them something as a thank you gift and let them know that you're always looking for referrals. You'll build a massive referral business doing that and just putting it into your standard operating procedure. I'll just say thank you, a gift, of some sort of fruit basket, it doesn't matter, but always do it with the idea of, gosh, you know, if you ever know of anybody, a friend, a family member, even other places of the country, and then you say that I'd love to, you know, give you a thank you gift or maybe donate to your favorite charity, and you'll start building more deal flow off of that by itself. So, cool. You know, I'm going to put you back on hold, Graham, and I'm going to open it up. I think I've got Justin here as we're kind of closing up and wrapping up the hour. All right, Justin, you are.
Hello?
Justin.
Justin.
Hey, are you getting feedback or am I okay?
You're okay. Little background noise. Go ahead.
Hey, I took it off my Bluetooth, so if I get a ticket, I'll just send it to you, Gary, the bill. So just wanted to jump in on the whole renegotiation thing because I'll tell you guys a tale and then I'll tell you one that's like going on as we speak. So I had one deal where the guy, 67.5 was his absolute bottom line. We wanted to be, most of the wholesalers I talked to said, you know, Justin, this thing's a knockdown. I got to get it. This thing in the low to mid 50s was what the consensus was among some of the bigger buyers. He wouldn't go for it. I said, you know, I'd need to at least. So, and by the way, my big strategy when I'm doing the reduction is I always need, there's always a guy in the finance department or a guy in the construction department who I have to go and talk to or who is busting my balls about this deal or the price that it's not working and that I'm compensated to get this thing closed, that I'm on your side, but I've got these other people in the company that I have to answer to. Anyway, he reluctantly agreed to go down to 65, and I actually have a buyer at 83, which is a whole other story. The buyer is not an investor. He's an attorney who wants to buy it for himself, and so he'll overspend because he's going to go owner off. The guy calls me back 2 days later, can't do 65, so I guess our deal is dead. Just wondering if you guys – I managed to weasel my way around it, but do you have any go-to – let's call it excuses for saying you need a discount and then weaseling back into the deal so as to not lose it.
Yeah, come back with good news. Just say, look, I got some good news. I was able to get it approved.
Okay, and just leave it at that? Don't even give them an excuse and just say I was able to get it approved?
Yeah.
Okay.
Give them 24 hours. Give them 24 hours. Don't jump on that immediately. You don't want to totally lose credibility. But it's a little bit of a...
Yeah, see, I usually say I'm just going to walk down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, okay. So, yeah, just get it.
I don't know if you know...
Good advice.
I hate using the car dealer example, but it's just it's a good one because that's probably the most professional... I shouldn't call it professional, but the most scripted sale. But every car dealership you ever walk into to negotiate, they'll say, well, let me go and talk to my boss and see if I can get a little bit better price. They never talk to a boss. They go and
right,
have coffee and hang out and smoke cigarettes or whatever they do. They never talk. That's just their standard operating procedure. So, you know, you can sometimes it's
– Yeah.
You know, and the other time, you know, Chris and I had that deal. Remember that with Calvin? I think this was last year, but – the guy just basically said no way he would negotiate. And you and I had a disagreement on strategy, Chris, but we ended up coming to a compromise. We went to the seller and told the seller that, you know, he wanted to back out, and he's like, there's no way. So we basically did back out and just said, we told Calvin to go back to him and say, gosh, you know, we were high on that price in the first place, and so we would agree with you that there's no deal here. And then we waited, and not only did we get the price we wanted, but we actually got a $5,000 additional discount. Remember that, Chris?
Yeah, I do.
And I think I put a bet on that, too, that that's what would happen. But it was just that, you know, sometimes you don't want to do this if you're brand new because, but you know, if you've got a nice pipeline of deals and you're making a healthy profit, you can play around sometimes with fire, and occasionally,
yeah.
you know, you, sometimes you do lose the deals. It's not 100% success, but if you ran the math over, if you ran the math over the long haul, you make a lot more money doing that.
So we got one that we picked up probably about 2 weeks ago. Our price was $400. The seller was really hung up on a 415 number. We had shopped it to a couple of our better buyers who basically wanted to be around, you know, 410, 415, and one of our better buyers, actually a good guy, turned us on to another key. Turned us on to another company, didn't want any money out of the deal. He just wants us to use our escrow. So we got it at 422. So it's a small spread. It's only $7,000. But the deposit is in. The deal's rock solid. And so the seller, so it's a husband and wife. I have been in direct contact with the husband the whole time with the exception of one conference call with the wife. He was okay at 400, and it was the wife who was busting his chops about the 415 price, even though we had comps to reflect, low comps to reflect the 400 price. So he's been calling me now yesterday, today, hey, when are you doing your final inspection? When are we going to be good to go? And no, because I've already put this seed of doubt in his mind with respect to retaining wall in the yard or whatever. So I owe this guy a call back, if not today, certainly tomorrow. Any, you know, obviously I'm going to go and try and get the 400, but again, it's that, you know, his wife's going to have to sign off on it. There's a little bit of trepidation there. It took them from the minute that the contract was in their email, it took a good 5, 6, 7 business days, almost 2 weeks to get the thing back from them. So I don't know if you have any thoughts or ideas on this one or just go with what I've been using, or, you know, it's a bit of a different dynamic because the woman who has to sign, that's not who I have the relationship with. I have a relationship with the husband.
Hmm.
I mean, I know what I'd do. I mean, I know what I do, and I think it's different than what Chris would do. So
okay.
Who goes first, Chris? You want to hear what I would do is I'd call the seller. I'd call the guy and just talk to him friendly, like, hey, I'm just getting back to you. How's everything going? Let him talk first. And depending upon the words that come out of his mouth, specifically if they're motivated, like, hey, just wanted to see how things are going, I know I would probably say something like, gosh, I didn't think that this thing was still going through. I mean, you know, a little bit, kind of just dropping the ball a little bit so you can get him at the 400. I mean, that's a $15,000 profit, so I would not let him know that you're ready to close escrow. What I would do, I would
right.
play a little.
Well, we're targeting the 30th of November, so that's the date.
Yeah, so you got some time, and it, you know, you could go back and just say, "Gosh, I just don't think, unless we got this thing around the 400, like we told you, I just don't think we can make this thing work." And part of my team, we've got some other funding, we're ready to close, but we got another deal that just came up, and I think we may lose money on this. And then you got to go silent. You got to basically see what his next response is going to be. You got the deal. You got it under contract at 415, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like they're going to back out. They want to sell. Worst case scenario, you got it at 415. So if you just play it coy, you know, and not be a jerk about it, but let him react, and then let him sit on it for a couple of days. Let them come back to you and say, okay, I talked to my wife, and I got her to agree. And then you got to get that paperwork in front of them to sign immediately.
Right.
I'd do that. Chico, you'd probably take the money down, huh?
Well, what do you mean take the money down? What do you mean by take the money down?
Take it for 415 and collect a smaller check.
No, I mean, in that scenario, you have a situation where you have your relationship with a guy, but then whatever you decide with the guy on the phone, he has to still sell it to the wife, right?
Exactly.
Right. So part of it is, I think, the way I would approach the conversation is also, I think to a certain extent, making sure that he's on your side and you're, you know, because he wants to sell, and then maybe a bit of, you know, managing the conversation that happens after that. So I think to me it's, you know, like if he really wants to sell and it makes sense to him, then even still bringing in, so let me ask you this. I mean, obviously we've come to an agreement and it sounds to me like you understand what I'm going at and you really want to sell this thing. I want to get it closed as soon as possible. What do you think is going to happen when you, you know, and maybe is it possible that you can walk him through a couple scenarios, right? So then that way you can prepare him for that conversation versus just whatever you and him agree on. He gets off the phone, talks to his wife, and she just blows everything out of the water. Is there a way that you can maybe perhaps counter some of the stuff that he might anticipate as issues and that you might be able to give him maybe some dialogue or give him some sort of some ammunition in order to overcome those, because you position yourself as, hey, you and I are on the same side. We just kind of not convince your wife, but rather we just got to get your wife to kind of see in the same way you are. But here's maybe something that you might want to consider explaining to your wife, you know, and you know what I mean? Like, in other words, you have to kind of future face him in a way so that he can overcome any foreseeable obstacles that he may have when he speaks with his wife.
And you also want to always give to get. So maybe what you do is you just say, look, I know my finance team, in order for us to actually make any money at this, we really need to be at 400. And, you know, but I think I could get them to agree to 405. Do you think you could work with your wife at 405 to make this thing work? Maybe they come back at 407 or 410, and at the very least you get a $5,000 reduction. But I'd still shoot for as close to 400. You may actually get the 400 without having to work. So if you come in and say 405, you may have just given yourself up $5,000. You might want to do it in a couple of phone conversations and feel him out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the only other thing I would say that's been working for us a lot lately is we're doing way more wholesaling now than we are fix and flip. We're really, unless it's like a juicy, juicy fix and flip deal where we're going to make a conservative 60 or 70 grand, we're just going to wholesale it. We're not screwing around with them. We've
mm-hmm.
started writing every single offer as buyer pays all closing costs, because we're just wholesaling them anyway, and it has been zero issues with any of our cash buyers thus far.
Awesome.
So
okay.
It's been
awesome.
A good tool to use, because what do I care? I'm not paying any closing costs. So, you know,
awesome.
It's been a good
yeah.
tool to use to help motivate people and herd them along.
The other thing I found about using that approach that the benefit is that yeah, the seller's less willing to go through the HUD with a fine-tooth comb. And if you have an assignment there and then they start fishing around the HUD, because in the end, it's what we agree to on price, less perhaps a tax proration. I don't know if you do a tax proration, but whatever the miscellaneous items are. And so there's very little to cover on the HUD because it's a net contract to them.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, that's it. I'll let you know how this one goes.
Perfect. Great to hear.
All right, Chris, give me a second here.
Huh?
Excellent. All right. Well, we are beyond the hour, and great conversation and great feedback from everybody. So thank you for the interaction and good questions. Again, Chris and I will not have a call next week. We'll be at our mastermind in San Diego. I'm sure we'll come back with some good nuggets from that group that we can share with the RIA Vault team on the call. So let's see, our next call is going to be scheduled for the week of Thanksgiving, so that should be November 24th. So look forward to having you all, and good selling, and go make some more money and share stories like today. All right, have a great one.
Perfect. Thanks, everybody.